Hi, this is Barry Lissett, Informs, the Institute for Operations Research and the Management Sciences. You're listening to Science and Better, a series of podcasts about ways that analytics and math modeling help people like you and organizations like your own. With the holiday shopping season at hand, it's never been more important to retailers and manufacturers to track and analyze information about the marketing of their products. Yet even in this age of big data, only a fraction of executives are using marketing analytics at their firms. In today's segment, we speak with Professor Gary Lillian of Penn State's Smeal College of Business. Together with Frank German and Arvind Rangaswamy, he's written a study entitled Performance Implications of Marketing Analytics. Professor Lillian is a past president of TIMS, which is one of Inform's predecessor societies. He's also a leading force in Inform's marketing society. Professor Lillian, welcome to the Science of Better.
Thank you very much, Barry.
Maybe we should start with the basics. What is marketing analytics and how do companies use it?
Well, you know, we've been hearing about big data and data mining and things of that nature for a long, long time. There are formal definitions of marketing analytics. The definition that we use is a somewhat technical one. It's, you know, we call it a technology-enabled and model-supported approach to do two things: to harness customer and market data in order to improve marketing decision-making and implementation. So there are two elements to that. One is the data-based portion of it, and the other is the improved marketing decision-making portion of it.
And can you give an example or two of companies that have used marketing analytics and succeeded? I know that you mentioned a couple in your study.
Oh yeah, well, they, you know, in fact, we have a long history of effective uses of marketing analytics. One firm that's one particular study was ABB Electric. In fact, ABB won the Edelman Prize. Many of our listeners, I think, will recognize this.
Uh-huh.
And what they ended up doing is using a form of analytics. They call them choice models. And what ABB did, and they were a new entrant in a declining industry, and they used choice models to identify what they called the switchable customer. And they were able to increase their profitability and market share in a sharply declining industry. In fact, what ABB was able to do was to increase their sales by nearly 25% with no increase in spending, simply by identifying which customers to target with which time, at which time, with which messages. Syntex Laboratories is another example, and again, an Edelman Prize winner.
Uh-huh.
And what happened at Syntex Labs is that they developed a new drug. It was called Naprosyn, which is naproxen sodium. We now know it as Aleve.
Oh.
And they were a small company, and they used a traditional method, you know, pretty much a business as usual method to allocate their resources. And they found out that they were actually getting almost 2/3 of their revenue from this particular drug and allocating perhaps a quarter of their marketing spending to it. So what they ended up doing is using some, in this case, resource allocation models, another form of marketing analytics, and they were able to increase, in their case, they were able to increase their revenue and profitability by about $25 million, again, with little increase in spending. So these are some of the kinds of things that firms do with marketing analytics. And the core of it is really identifying which customers to target with which kinds of messages, with which kinds of offerings, who to spend on, who not to spend on, what kinds of offerings to develop.
And given the value, I think every business exec would aspire to using analytics in general and marketing analytics in specific. But you've seen objections going back to a major business book of the 1980s and more recently to one of this country's best-known generals. What's their objection and how do you answer them?
Well, you know, particularly when it comes to fields like marketing, there is a great deal, and there's sound reason to believe that one should, in fact, not abandon judgment when making decisions. So there are many organizations that that have traditional ways, traditional ways to allocate resources. The sales force is in the field all the time. They speak to customers all the time. So consequently, can or should they abandon their traditional ways of doing business to the quote-unquote to some of these new tools? What does the computer know? What do the machines know? And so we typically get pushback from from many individuals and organizations. In fact, it's funny, one of the most popular ones we hear, of course, these days is the quotes that we get from Steve Jobs, in which he famously said, "Well, customers don't know what they need."
Uh-huh.
So he was definitely negative about sort of database decision making. He had great intuition, and he was successful. So people point to examples like that. Said, why do we need to do these data based or model based approaches when we have such wonderful judgment in our top management and our experienced leaders?
But obviously, judgment and intuition isn't everything.
Well, judgment and intuition does not actually have a very good track record. In fact, folks who've read books like Moneyball or things of that nature realize that you can get yourself really caught by going down that particular path. What we found in organizations, and one of the motivations, of course, for the research that we're talking about, is that there is this tremendous tension. In fact, in 2009, there was a McKinsey study, and the study was basically it was a very simple question: to what extent do you employ a systematic process? It's very simple. It's even pre-analytics, a systematic process to review your spending for marketing. And only about 10% of the firms said that they use a very heavily systematic process to regularly review. They do quantitative analysis, marketing mix modeling, quantitative analytics of effectiveness. So what that meant was that almost 90% of the firms, and these are Fortune 500 firms, basically said that they really don't use a systematic process to identify their spending and to make decisions like which markets to enter, where to allocate their advertising, and again, what budgets to set for the various business processes.
Which is surprising given companies of that size.
Exactly.
Which leads us to the study. What was the objective and why did you conduct it?
It was funny because maybe just a little bit of historic perspective. Again,
okay.
We're talking to an Informs audience here. John Little, who's really formative in this this society and throughout our profession, had a seminal paper in 1970 in which he said that that the big problem with management science models is the managers practically never use them. And then there was a 25th anniversary, and that was published in Management Science. It was 25th anniversary. Retrospective on that article. This is one of the top, the top 10 articles, I think, top 10 cited articles in the journal. And what he said there, in looking back on that article 25 years later, was that the good news is that more managers than ever are using models, but the bad news is that many managers don't even realize they're using models. And he said what hasn't really changed is organizational inertia. So he's really reflecting back on the same story that led us to, sort of the key research questions, and the major research question here really is, well, do the firms who deploy use marketing models, marketing analytics, do they do better in the marketplace? And if the answer to that, now we're talking about this not at the project level, but really at the organizational level, and if the answer to that was yes, we wanted to ask the second question: well, how do they get there? Can they simply just turn a spigot on to deploy marketing analytics, or do they need, are there some internal processes that they need? in order to do that. So that was the purpose of the study.
And you surveyed Fortune 1000 companies. How did the survey work?
Well, you know what we ended up. we heavily leveraged our links, the research team's links to Penn State and to University of Notre Dame, to use our network of alumni to identify respondents, top respondents at Fortune 1000 firms. And we actually had quite a remarkable response rate. We had about almost 25% of the folks contacted at firms, and you know, the stellar list, I can go down a list of IBM, Honeywell, American Express, Marriott, Raytheon, Capital One, DuPont, et cetera, et cetera. And so we got over 200 respondents, and for those 200 respondents, turns out that almost 75% of them were at the director level or above. So we were quite confident in the fact that they were the right levels of respondents, and the respondents had very high confidence in their response to the information. So,
and I should say that Fortune 500 and Fortune 1000 companies are the gold mine in all kinds of research, and these executives usually are extremely difficult to track down.
Well, yeah, so in other words, we were actually, I'm glad you point that out. Sometimes sometimes people don't realize that getting this kind of response rate from top executives at top firms is quite different than getting a response rate from a survey of consumers or something like that. And that's, I think that's a good point. Thank you.
Let me remind our listeners, I'm Barry List, and you're listening to the Informs podcast, Science of Better. Today's guest is Gary Lillian of Penn State, who's discussing marketing analytics. Did your research indicate whether companies that use analytics perform well, either in terms of better sales and more efficient use of their resources?
Well, you know, realistically, Barry, we wouldn't be on the line here if the answer was no. So the answer is that there was indeed good news. And, you know, as you said, well, okay, so what does it mean to do better? Well, let me put things in perspective here. It turns out that you know, that as usual with most bits of research of this nature, the answers depend. So, but if we, you know, and it depends on the industry. So, for example, the effect is strong and positive overall. So, in general, it pays to invest in marketing analytics. Mm-hmm. So a firm might say, well, what benefit could I get by increasing my spend? Every firm says, well, we're investing in marketing analytics. So we tried to answer the question about, well, what would happen if you invested more? But what does it mean to invest more? So suppose, for example, you take an average firm in an average industry. And so that firm's at the 50th percentile in that industry. So there are 100 firms in the industry, so they're number 50 in terms of their relative, and it's relative investment in marketing analytics. If they went up from the 50th percentile to the 65th percentile, okay, according for the firms in our sample, on average, those firms would see an 8% increase on return on assets, which would mean an increase of $70 million for the average firm in our sample in terms of net income. Now, that's for an average firm in an average industry.
And $70 million for an average firm is a substantial amount.
Well, $70 million, again, $70 million is not a trivial amount, and this is to the bottom line.
And that's an average firm.
That's for an average firm. Now, let's suppose in an average firm in an average industry. Now, it turns out the effects are stronger in the industries in which you would expect, and where the customer needs change relatively rapidly. So, you know, you can't go out and survey customers every 5 years and you're going to get the same results. You know, the new products are coming in. So in firms with high competition, where there's a lot of churn, a lot of changes going on, and where needs and wants change rapidly, and again, you know, you can think about if you think about markets like the tablet market these days, which is, you know, incomplete, you know, is really going crazy. In those kinds of industry, that same level of change, again, on average, would lead to about $180 million increase in net income. Now, this should be enough money for, and by the way, the average net income of the firms in our sample is about $900 million.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, you know, so that's a 21% increase in net ROI. So now we're talking about, you know,
an ROA, I guess, is a distinction
ROA,
here.
Yeah, ROA is return on assets.
Okay. And is this a temporary advantage? Is it more than temporary?
Well, okay, so that gets us into a situation about, well, what does a firm have to do to get there? So, you know, and when I asked about, when I mentioned you know, being able to turn a spigot on, and we have some theoretic reasons for this, but this all starts with advocacy from the top management team. There's a literature in the management domain about the fact that firms take on, if you will, sort of the personality of their leaders. So you need top management team advocacy. Now, in order for that, you know, and then following that that top management team advocacy, what the firm has to do is invest in data, have to invest in a good IT infrastructure, and then knowledgeable and trained employees.
And there are different ways that you look at training of employees, as I recall.
Yeah, well, you know, this is a make versus buy decision. Much of it is buying, one of my colleagues often pointed out that you can't get an eagle by sending a duck to eagle school. What it means is you have to actually select appropriate employees, and most importantly, and this is really the key thing in terms of the sustainable advantage, you have to have a supportive organizational culture, a culture that is willing to make decisions based on facts, based on data, based on analytics. And there's literature that indicates that culture is sticky. So in other words, if you have a culture that supports analytics, that is a necessary condition, by the way, in our analysis for the deployment of analytics. If the culture is basically an intuition, historical, inertial-based organization, it's very difficult to get that deployment done.
You can't play lip service. You have to really believe what you're doing.
Exactly. And so consequently, the top management team can't simply say, well, now we're going to be an analytics culture. You know, culture is sticky. And so consequently, you have an organization that operates that way. Your competitors may want to shift, but they're going to have difficulty doing it, number one. And number two, what we found in our study is there is a make versus buy decision here. So in other words, you can't simply say, well, we'll outsource this. You know, our research indicates that this is an internal capability, and that firms that say, well, I can hire a consulting firm and somehow or other we will become more analytics oriented. Well, if you haven't invested in the people, if you haven't invested in the internal IT, if you haven't generated the internal culture, according to our research, you're not going to get the performance that our research indicates.
Let me remind our readers that this is A Science of Better, and we're discussing marketing analytics with Professor Gary Lillian. What does increased competition do to the effectiveness of marketing analytics?
Well, that was the increased competition, according to our research, will in fact increase the benefit of by almost threefold. You know, if you go from sort of average to high level of competition, you can get almost a threefold increase in the effectiveness of greater investment in marketing analytics.
And what about industry penetration? If everyone in an industry uses analytics, does that wipe out your advantage?
Yeah, pretty much so. And in fact, we had some hypotheses about that. And essentially, what we found is that the more highly, you know, in an industry where pretty much everybody is at a high level of deployment of marketing analytics, you don't get that return. But again, our hypothesis about that is that at that point, it simply becomes the cost of entry. In order to compete in industries like that, you have to be heavily analytics-based. And, you know, you can think about database marketers who've had to be doing this, had to be very strong in this domain for many, many years.
We only have time for one or two more questions, so I guess I would ask you to recap something about what you were saying before in terms of drilling down to the nitty-gritty of the features that a firm needs to effectively deploy marketing analytics, whether in the form of IT support or the skills, the kind of skills of analytics people, or changing the corporate culture. Did you want to sum that up?
Sure. I guess the summary of our message is yes. And by the way, we've had, when we've spoken, particularly to marketing analytics or business analytics firms, they are delighted to get, you know, to hear this story because they can finally answer this question to their clients about, you know, well, does this kind of investment pay off? So, the key bottom line is yes, the investment pays off, and it pays off more in organizations or in industries where competition is higher. It pays off more when customer preferences are changing. And in order to get there, you need the support of top management teams. This is our research indicates that a bottom-up approach at least does not seem to be effective. But you do need top management team advocacy and buy-in. You need a supportive organizational culture. You need investment in knowledgeable employees, and you need a firm that's going to be driven by data. So you need to invest in data and a good IT infrastructure. And once you have all of that, there will be that increase in deployment, which, according to our research, is an investment that'll pay off.
That's all the time we have today. We've been talking with Dr. Gary Lillian of Penn State Smeal College of Business. Dr. Lillian, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome. I enjoyed it very much myself.
And thank you for listening to the Science of Better podcast by Informs, the Institute for Operations Research and the Management Sciences. For more information about operations research and the series of podcasts, visit us on the web at www.informs.org. Good day, and remember, keep on crunching those numbers.